Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast. Today's guest is Ashley Poston. Ashley wrote one of my favorite YA series called Once in a Con. Ashley has a new book that is out today called Among Bees and Briars. In this interview, we chat about fandoms, Ashley's writing process, her books, and of course, some book recommendations. Now let's go to the interview. Hi, Ashley. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. It's a beautiful day, so can't really complain.
That's good. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Ashley Poston, and I am the author of the Once Upon a Con series, which includes Geekerella, Princess and the Fangirl, and Bookish and the Beast. I also wrote a space fantasy duology called Heart of Iron and the sequel Soul of Stars, and my newest book coming out on October 20th, which is Among the Beasts and Briars, which is a fun little fairy tale romp through a cursed wood. So I guess I'm an author.
Yes. So what inspired you to become a writer?
That's not true. I've not always wanted to be a writer. I did want to be a marine biologist for like a hot minute in third grade, but then I realized it took science and math to do that. And I wanted to save the whales, but I couldn't. I gravitated towards writing when I was a lot younger because I had a very bad speech impediment. I stuttered a lot and I got picked on for it. So I was a pretty quiet kid, even though I was actually rather talkative, but to my peers, I really didn't talk much because, you know, like they would pick on me for it and stuff. So I went to speech therapy and all that. And while I was like working through that, I found fanfic. In like fifth and sixth grade. That was during like a really rough part of my middle school years. Everyone has a rough middle school experience, I feel. But I started in fanfic and I realized that, what I'm thinking, I can actually put into words and I can make it sound like beautiful and I can like explore what I want to in writing. So I started to do that in fanfic because it's what I knew best. And I thought it was really cool to like play in someone else's world. So I started writing Yu-Gi-Oh! Fanfic when I was in sixth grade. And I still write fanfic today. I think it's a great character study, but that's kind of how I started. And then I went on to write some plays in high school and won some awards for it. I was a graphic designer for a while. I graduated university with an English degree and an advertising PR minor. I went on to work at Kodansha USA in their like marketing department, doing stuff for like Sailor Moon and Attack on Titan. Because I'm a huge anime nerd, by the way. So I did that for a while, and then I also worked at Bloomsbury as their marketing designer, designing lots of cool swag for some really awesome books. And then I had the opportunity to go full-time author, and I had enough books out, well, books coming out that I had to, you know, concentrate on them. And so that's how that happened. That's how I am where I am right now.
I love your journey. I love that, you know, it started from an idea, started with fan fiction, and then it just evolved and you took different detours, but it still led you to writing, you know, as an escape, as a place for you to share your stories.
Yeah, in my like professional career, I've always gravitated around some sort of like bookish thing. So even if I wasn't writing, I was still like adjacent to it. Even in college, I was a page at a library and I was assistant to a screenwriter. And I helped him like pin a nonfiction novel about bringing anime and manga to like a westernized world and how localization works and all of that fun stuff. And so, I've just kind of always like gravitated around the bookish community because I apparently love it a lot. So
I love it. So what was your journey to get that first book published?
It was a very, very long one. My agent, Holly Root, she put out, well, okay, let me go back a little bit. I had 52 rejections by the time I queried my current agent, Holly Root. And I had queried, like, that's those rejections were from two different novels. And so she put out a call for a space opera. And I was like, hey, I have Anastasia in space. Let's try it. So I shot my shot. She was like, yeah, sure. I love your voice. And I was like, cool. So that's how I got my agent with Heart of Iron. And so we went on sub with it. But while I was on sub with Heart of Iron, Quirk came to me and they were like, hey, we have read your Bloomsbury ebook only, you know, books. And they're really geeky because I had published two ebooks with Bloomsbury before I got my agent. And they're like, hey, we like how geeky you are. We like your voice. Do you want to try out for this IP project? And I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? What is it? And they're like, well, it's Cinderella at a sci-fi convention. And I was like, what? It was like the dog sort of thing. And I was like, yes, 100%. I want to try out for this. And so I did. And like, it's really funny because I had been trying to work on a contemporary, like, cosplay story of my own for a while and like nothing fit. And so finally they're like, oh, hey, how about try Cinderella? And I was like, what? Oh my gosh, this might actually work. Somehow they chose me to write Geekerella, and I was just so excited. And then after I got the deal for Geekerella, about 3 months later, I sold Heart of Iron. So it's just really funny how publishing works sometimes. Heart of Iron was on sub for 8.5 months. And I got Geekerella in the meantime, and that took like maybe a month and a half. And so I'm like, what is time? It's okay. This is fine. So yeah, that's kind of how my first two books came about, because they were kind of like working in tandem with each other. But yeah, I'm really happy that I got the chance to write the Once Upon a Con series, and that like they chose me, and I got to put my own twist on things, and I got to explore fandom and the community that basically raised me. I found out so many things while I was in fandom. I still am in fandom, but I realized so much about myself, like RPing and talking to other like people in like the fandom. And it was really great to like transition my own experiences to a book form, and then have other people read those books and go, oh, me too. This is me too. And I was like, oh, I thought I was the only one. So it was really eye-opening and really great. And, you know, sometimes I feel like, especially when we like something a lot and we're a fan of something, we're the only one in like real life who likes it, you know? Mm-hmm. But then like, even if you have friends online, it's like, they're still distant, and it's still like through social media, and it's still virtually, but I don't know. It feels like books speak in a different way because they're more tactile, I guess. And it's like, oh, well, that's me too. Like I see myself in these characters or in this fandom or in this experience. And yeah, it was just really nice. I really enjoyed it.
So which fandoms, I'm curious, which fandoms do you gravitate towards?
Since I am an absolute weeb at heart, I definitely gravitate towards a lot of animes. I still go back and I still like brush off the old like Yu-Gi-Oh fanfic that I really like, and I still reread it sometimes. I like peek into the fandom and like wonder what the new kids are doing. It's so funny because it's like fandoms never really die. It's just they like the actual story ends and like the fandom persists. It's like this eternal sort of love that keeps carrying it forward. And I, as like more people come and find it and find that they connect with it, and that's just like something really magical about fandom. I'm really into My Hero Academia because I love me some superhero kids. Let's see here. Oh my gosh, Julie and the Phantoms. I can't like not talk about Julie and the Phantoms. The fandom is so wonderful and so super queer, and I love all of them. It's pretty great.
I love this. So let's talk about your writing process. What does it look like? Do you follow an outline? Do you see where the story leads you? What is your writing process looks like for you?
It really all depends on the book. So for the last few books that I've sold, I've had I sold an outline. So I sold a proposal, but I sometimes like outlining an entire book first and then like writing it. So the way I outline a book is not the way I think a lot of my peers outline a book, which is really, really funny. I end up basically writing a zero draft, which is all of the scenes that I really want in there. And then it's connected by like short summaries of what happens between those scenes. And like that's basically my proposal. It's like, it's usually at least 50 pages. It's the entire book. And then on top of that, it's usually 50 pages of the first 50 pages. That's how I like to sell on proposal. And that's also how I like to write, because I do like writing a zero draft first and getting all of like the juicy bits into the story first, and then going back and sort of like coloring in like the smaller details. I'm doing that right now with a book that's not announced yet. And it's just, I was just like last night thinking past me for putting in a note that present me definitely did not remember. And it's like, I keep on revisiting and rediscovering these characters as I'm writing them, because it's been at least a few months since I wrote the zero draft. And so when I'm like writing it, it's like discovering everything all over again. It's like a path you tread once, but then you kind of like, you know, go off and you do life, and then you come back to that same like heart in the woods and you're like, oh, I forgot the path. Let's see if I can find it. So, and then like your past, you left you markers along the path, and it's just, it's so fun. And I love like piecing things together. Like I love puzzles and everything. So, that's kind of how I do it. It's a mess, but it's my like perfect blend of chaos.
I love this. And so let's talk about characters. How did they come to you? Do you brainstorm them beforehand? Do they just appear? Like, what's the process of developing your characters?
I wish I brainstormed them beforehand. I think that would make everything just so much easier. But I usually don't start with characters. I usually start with like an instance or something that I want to explore. There are a few times when I start with like a scene, like just like for instance, in Heart of Iron, the first scene that ever came to me that I ever thought about was the scene where Anna and Di, they're jumping from one ship to another, in space. And so that was the first thing I wrote, and I wrote it. I didn't know who either of these people were. I didn't know. I knew that Di was an android, and I knew that Anna was like a space adventurer. I didn't know she was a space pirate at the time. And that was the first image that I had. And so I usually carry those images with me, like as I write, because I'm a very visual person. And so I really like to hold on to like that feeling of like, how, like what that image like evoked in me. And so that's kind of how I flesh out the characters, because I was like, oh, who is this girl and who is this android, and like why are they jumping from ship to ship, and like what's happening, And so I like to explore things that way through the actual writing of the book. So it's kind of a difficult question to answer because it all like pieces together. Like between plot and character and like theme and motive and everything. It just all kind of like coalesces together to make certain characters. There are some instances where like, okay, this character is going to be this way, or like that character is going to like that. Like for instance, in Bookish and the Beast, I had to write Vance a certain way. because of Bookish and the Beast, there is like in the original Beauty and the Beast fairy tale, there is this really, really like difficult power dynamic to kind of work through, and transitioning that power dynamic to contemporary wasn't really going to work. And I just kind of got like squicky thinking about it. So instead, I had to like kind of reinvent the beastie wheel, I guess. And I had to level out their power dynamic, but to do that, I had to know like what Vance was about and who he was and like what his deal was before going in and finding out, you know, what Rosie loved, how she reacted to certain things. And if I'm like writing a scene and the scene is not working, I will actually put the characters in like a fanfic trope. I dropped Rosie and Vance into a coffee shop AU to try and like see how they interacted with each other. And I did the same with Jess and Imogen and Princess and the Fangirl. I didn't know, I kept on trying to write their reactions to each other, but it was never really working all that well. So I just picked up the characters and I put them in like a coffee shop AU basically. And I kind of like worked out how they would greet each other, how they would, you know, react to each other. And like their like rapport. And then once I like figured that out and like it was working for me, I put them back into my story and like it worked out a lot better because I knew exactly like how they felt towards each other and like what they were about. So yeah.
That's fascinating. You know, yeah, it takes work, but it's fascinating to see like, you know, maybe placing them in another alternate universe that can actually give you a better sense of the character.
Yeah, like that's why I always say that fanfic is a great character study. Like if you were ever like, you know, stuck on a scene or something, just pick up the characters and put them somewhere else. Like put them in a trope that you know really well and see how they'll react in that trope. Because then you'll find out more about those characters and what they're like and how they react to certain things. And then you'll know them better going back to your story.
Hello, guys. So let's talk about your book. So for the Once Upon a Con series, you did fairy tale retellings. What was the process like to coming up with the story and updating it in today's time within the fandom world?
So the first one, the Geekerella, it was a Cinderella retelling, and I really didn't get a chance to like choose the fairy tale for that because it came to me with the IP. Quirk was really cool and like really lenient about everything. My editor at the time like only gave me like a one paragraph summary of an entire book, and I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to go off this? Cool, this is great. I'm real excited. And so I got to play with these characters, and I got to create Darien how I wanted, because in the summary of that she gave me, Darien was kind of like this kind of stuck up, very Vancey sort of character, like super spoiled. And I was like, no, let's have a cinnamon roll with a heart of gold. Come on.
Yes.
I mean, come on, let's just have a fanboy, like a really, really like non-toxic fanboy. Let's have a non-toxic love interest for once in a Cinderella retelling. So I kind of went about restructuring the Cinderella retelling with like the goalpost that I needed to achieve. Like I knew that she was a cosplayer, and so I had to weave cosplaying into the original fairy tale. And then I knew that the ball was going to be at the convention, ExcelsiCon. So it was just like kind of like slowly like working my way through it. And then the Darien scenes, because Cinderella is such, you know, a Cinderella story, you really don't really get much of Prince Charming until the ball scene. So I was like, well, what's he supposed to do during the entire book? And that's when I thought about the you got mail aspect of it, where like they're texting each other and not knowing, you know, who the other person is really. And I was like, yeah, this is great. I love this. And it was a trope that I absolutely adored in fanfic, actually. So I was like, okay, yeah, let's do this. Let's see how this works. And it worked out so well. It was just a bunch of like happy coincidences just piling up together to create Geekerella. For Princess and the Fangirl, it was like close to the same. My editor and I, we worked together to find a fairy tale that we both agreed on. And then I just went to work basically fleshing it out. And I knew that I wanted Jess to be one of the main characters, because Jess was one of my favorite characters in Geekerella. And I wanted to explore her and like the fact that she was gay. I was like, yes, I have to do this. Because I am also queer, so I wanted to have like some aspect of, I guess, myself in one of my books. Of course, there's gonna be more, you know, going forward. But yeah, so that was fun. And then with Bookish and the Beast, I just basically I was like, look, if this is the last one, can I please do Beauty and the Beast? This is what I know so well. Can I please do it? And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess. And I'm like, look, you either give me Beauty and the Beast or you give me Snow White and I write a reverse harem. Like, your choice.
Oh my gosh.
and they're like, well, Beauty and the Beast. And I'm like, smart choice, but also seven really hot guys in a room would have been really fun to write too.
Yes, as a romance reader, I'm like, yes, please.
It's like if I ever write another Once Upon a God, that's gonna be it. It's gonna be a Snow White retelling. It's gonna be seven hot dudes in a room being so romantically attracted to each other. It's unreal. like that's gonna be it. But yeah, so I got to write my favorite fairy tale, Beauty and the Beast, and I had been looking forward to it for so long. I had put like little like nuggets of it in both Geekerella and Princess and the Fangirl, like hoping that like if I dreamed it hard enough, I could somehow will this book into existence. And then in Bookish and the Beast, and then when they said yes, I was like, oh my god, I actually have to connect all these plot lines now. Crap. But it was a lot of fun.
Oh my gosh. It was a lot of fun to read them. So as a reader, I absolutely adore it. Like, I absolutely adore the retellings, because you had a unique spin to them. Like, it was just like it was a fun book to read, which is like when you're looking for books, like I think books in the pandemic, I think this is like a great series to read, or like it's just a fun, you know, world. Like, once upon a time, we used to go to cons, you know.
Yeah, it's like, oh, once upon a time, a million years ago, we actually all crowded within a meatpacking building and we somehow bumped elbows.
Yes. Oh my god.
Strange.
Awesome. So let's talk about your latest release, which is Among Beasts and Briars. You mentioned it's a fairy tale wood curse world. So what was the source of inspiration?
So I first wrote this book at the end of 2015, beginning of 2016, when like the world started going to, you know, hell in a handbasket.
Yeah.
and I was like, I need to just get away. And so for 2 weeks, I did nothing but like fast draft this novel. And it's, and like the first draft is nothing like what readers will read on Tuesday. But I needed to get lost in something that like had perils and, you know, had like a will they, won't they romance, and that had all my favorite tropes, but I knew at the end there was going to be a happy ending, that things were going to work out. Mm-hmm. And I wanted I wanted to write a book where, like, even from the beginning, like, you knew things were going to work out. That, like, oh, this isn't the kind of fairy tale where everyone dies at the end. This is the one where things actually somehow work out. And so I found, like, the voice for Karis very early on, because she was, like, she's so uncertain about, like, her future and, like, what she wants. And, like, she's very happy in her small little bubble. And, like, I felt that way until, like, you know, the bubble burst, and then we all realized, oh, like, we're in trouble, guys. And so it was a way for me to kind of, like, explore those feelings and like also, like, being able to tell a story about, you know, how, like, the things you think are the truth might not be the truth, and, like, the stories that we tell might not be what actually happened. It's kind of like a very, very lighthearted take on revisionist history, basically. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to tell a story about a girl who gets lost in the woods, and has to have help from a talking bear and a fox turned human. I mean, you know, just the simple things in life.
Yeah. Yes, I have to tell you, it was just like, I'm grateful, like, it had a happy ending, because there were some times where, like, it can be a doozy. You go through all this journey, you go through all this emotional breakdown, and it's, like, not a happy ending. And this was, like, it all came together in a way that I was like, oh, okay. It feels like a balm to my soul. So I love the journey of her trying to figure out how to fix this world hell in a handbasket that happened, you know. Mm-hmm. And having the fox come in and be like, you know, being so uncertain about his stuff, his role, and just, like, just this whole process of just going through. And then the ending, I have to tell you, I loved, there was, like, beyond, like, after you were done, there was still more to come. And it was like this nugget of, like, this truffle of joy, you know.
I know, right? Oh my gosh. So with those, like, post ending credits is what I call them. I asked my editor, I was like, Jordan, can I do something kind of weird? And he was like, what do you mean? I was like, can I put two post ending scenes into this book? And he was like, yeah, sure. So I did. And I was like, cool, great. Now people are expecting more books about them.
Yeah. Is it going to be a standalone or?
So the way Among the Beasts and Briars is structured, it is a standalone, but I think you might see the world again in the next year or two.
Okay.
So the Tale of Aloria is done, but there's a bunch of other, you know,
yeah,
countries and kingdoms around the area that are also, you know, connected to the Wildwood. And oh my gosh, I can't wait to tell you about the next one. It's not announced yet, but it is so gay. I love it so much.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I love the fact that it was standalone. I have a thing about YA series, because I'm like, I'm a voracious reader, and so I will binge read the series. So the series needs to be completed in order for mm-hmm. me to read it, because otherwise I'm like, I hate waiting for a year. So it was one of those books I was like, let me see, let me just pray for the best. And I was like, it was such a satisfying ending that I was like, oh, this feels like perfect. Like, I can recommend this to my friends to pick it up and read it now, not wait.
I know. I love standalone so much. And so, yeah, you're not going to see, you might see Karis and Fox again, but not as main characters. Yeah. It's going to be kind of like the Once Upon a Con series, where they're all companions to each other. But you can read them separately, because they all take place in different parts of the world.
Oh, I'm so excited. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
My favorite genre is, I really like contemporary, like, paranormal and contemporary fantasy. I'm just super trash for it.
I love it. What has been a book that you read this past year that you love?
I loved Legendborn by Tracy Dion. Like, holy cow. Like, I never read a book in one day, and I 100% read that book in one day. And that's a chunky boy. Like, that book is super, super thick. And I breezed right through it. I loved it so much.
Oh, I have to pick it up. I know, I heard great things about it. And if you read it one day, I feel like that's going to be a great book to read.
It is part of a series, though. So there's an asterisk there.
Okay. That's good to know. Thank you. Of course. So, Ashley, tell us where we can find you online.
You can find me at Ash Poston on Twitter. I usually just talk a lot about the anime that I'm watching and the manga that I'm reading and the fanfic that I'm writing, but never giving you the username for. And you can find me at _AshPoston on Instagram, because someone is sitting on my name and I am very upset.
Oh no.
They're not even posting anything on it. They're just literally sitting on it. And I'm like, come on, that's my name. Can I have my name? But no, it's fine. So _AshPoston on Insta. You can find me around on TikTok at @NotAshleyPoston. And also on Tumblr at the same URL. And you can visit my website at www.ashposted.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Ashley, for being on the show.
Of course. Thank you so much for inviting me. This was so much fun.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance-loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.